Marvin Minsky is one of the pioneers in the field of artificial intelligence. His work helped inform Stanley Kubrick's vision of HAL in the movie 2001. Minsky's currently on staff at MIT and the author of the book The Emotion Machine. Minsky told Steve Paulson that human consciousness isn't the mystery it's cracked up to be. In fact, it isn't even necessary to understand every tiny function of the brain to make a conscious computer.
I can understand exactly how a computer works, although I'm very fuzzy on how the transistors work. And my bet is that when all is done, it'll turn out that it didn't matter very much how each synapse worked, because most of the higher levels of the brain are made of things called cortical columns. They're bunches of about 500 or 1,000 cells, which are connected in tricky circuits all over the cortex. There are slightly different arrangements of these. And I think what's happened is that evolution evolved these at times in different situations so that what the cortical column does as a unit is more or less independent of the chemical behavior of the parts of it. Just like a computer, one of my students, Danny Hillis, once made a computer out of Tinker Toys. And you could make a program for that, and it would work just the same as if it were made out of vacuum tubes or transistors. So although it's nice to know how the individual nerve cells work, what's more important, I think, is the middle levels of organization, which makes the parts of the brain do things that don't depend very much on the small chemical events inside them. In fact, there's something called the blood-brain barrier, which keeps most chemicals that you eat out of the brain. And we evolved that so that the brains wouldn't be affected by all sorts of things. So I think understanding the insulations that keep the higher level mental processes from being too much influenced by the low level ones are very important. And I don't think neuroscientists focus on that because their training is mostly on the lower levels of how do individual cells work, or else on the very high psychiatric levels of why do some people make wrong inferences and get upset at things that aren't really dangerous and so forth.
I think sort of the common impression of what computers do and can't do is that computers are extremely good at computation and figuring out probabilities. That's why computers can play chess so brilliantly. What they're not good at is what children can do very well. I mean, a two-year-old child has a basic sense of awareness and of how to walk across the room and perceive various things. Those simple things that humans do, that seems to be what computers have such a hard time with. Am I right about that?
Well, it's not computers. It's programs that are written by programmers. Certainly no machine today to make a bed or babysit, even though it can play chess or assemble a car. And the reason is, I think, that what we've done is traditionally every computer program does a certain particular job in a certain way. So that if you're solving an algebra problem, you turn on an algebra program. And if you're solving a program to arrange your calendar, it's a program that knows about blocks of time and makes sure they don't overlap. There are all sorts of industrial programs that make sure that when you organize your assembly line, you don't close a box before you put the product in it and stuff like that. So each program today has a particular purpose, and you can usually tell that from its name. Now, what I think happened in the brain is that at a high level, what happens is there's a kind of huge switch, and each human brain has hundreds of different kinds of programs, and I call them ways to think. And whenever you're in a situation, one part of your brain says, what's the obstacle? What problem am I facing? What do I have to accomplish? And then you look in your memory of similar problems, and it says, well, I solved a problem like this by thinking in a certain way. I turned on a certain kind of planning. I turned on a certain kind of way of allocating time. And I think, for example, when you get angry, this is just a different collection of processes than you normally use, and I think generally few of them. What's the difference between an angry person and one who isn't? The angry person is not looking so far ahead. He's turning off all the self-conscious reflective processes, or most of them, and he's turning on fast reactions. He's also getting red in the face and baring his teeth, which scares people, and that's something that we inherited from very ancient ancestors.
Now, are you saying it's possible to build a computer that's just like a human being, or maybe a better version of a human being?
I think it's not only possible, but it's really urgent for a funny reason. I think understanding how to make an intelligent machine is very vital in the next 50 years. And the reason is that we're facing all sorts of environmental crises and population crises and so forth. Everyone expects the world will get up to 10 billion people. But something else is happening in parallel. Did you know that the average lifetime in developed countries has been increasing about 1 year every four? So now it's 50 years since 1950, and the average person in the developed countries lives 12 years longer. Well, I think there's going to be some sudden improvements in that, because we're going to find out the 10 most important genes involved with aging or biological processes and fix them. And all of a sudden, everyone's going to live for maybe 200 years. I expect this will happen within the next 50 years. And so what will we have in 100 years? We will have a population of people, most of whom are 100 years old, and they'll only have one child because the population has to stop growing, although I suppose we could manage 50 billion if we were very efficient. And so I think it's very urgent that we have machines that can do ordinary work.
It seems to me that this is also getting into some very big philosophical ideas. It really gets to the question of what it means to be human and whether there is a fundamental dividing line between human beings and machines. Do you think there is?
Well, I think what happened in the last 5 million years, there's no clear dividing line between chimpanzees and humans. The split was about 5 million years ago. There were four main primates, orangutans, gorillas, baboons, and chimpanzees, and they all were pretty smart. And we came from the chimpanzees in various ways, several species of almost humans. And I think what happened in our case was that we developed extra levels of brain. Chimpanzees can solve many interesting problems, but they can't think about how they solved them in a very articulate manner. So we have this high-level ability to think about our recent thoughts and to criticize them and to say, well, maybe I should think in a different way, or maybe I couldn't solve that problem because I didn't know enough, so I'll go to school or I'll ask someone else or whatever.
So do you think computers will be able to have exactly those kinds of mental functions?
I think we'll have to program a lot of those if we're going to make the machines to be as resourceful as us. They'll have to have many different ways to do things. We'll have to equip them so that they can invent new ways. We invent new ways to think all the time.
So you're saying that computers will always be something fundamentally different from human beings?
No. I think in an ordinary computer, if you write a high-level program that says, how have I been doing on this problem? What are the obstacles? What's a good way to think? And then it has 100 good ways to think. In other words, instead of making programs to do one job, we have to work on this administrative part. And I don't see why that couldn't fit in your Macintosh or PC. It's just that we've been programming them to use only one method for each problem.
I guess I'm fascinated by this question of what it means to be human and whether there's some basic essence of being human that is fundamentally different from computers. It sounds like you're saying no.
I'm sure it's not different from computers. It's just that our computers don't yet have a reflective layer of programming, and as soon as we put that in, then we'll see that they become more resourceful and show the wider range of things that humans have. And of course, humans are, there's nothing special that makes us human except, I think, having more levels of thinking. And there's no reason why we should stop at the six that I discuss in the book.
So getting back to this question of self, then, you're saying that somewhere in the future, computers might have a sense of self just as human beings do?
Well, I think sense of self is a suitcase word. I have a sense of myself as a person with a body that's trying to avoid being injured. I have a sense of myself as a scientist, and that self lives for thousands of years. I feel that I'm in a community with Aristotle and Bertrand Russell and, you know, Darwin and Einstein and all those people. We're one big creature. That's the identity of being in this great organization called science that criticizes its beliefs and keeps trying to find new theories and more evidence for them. And then I'm a member of a family, and that's a self, and there's a profession. I'm a professor, and sometimes I think, I'm a professor. Am I talking to the students enough? Am I doing the right thing? So there isn't one self.
So the concept of a unified self is an illusion.
I think it's a terrible illusion. It sort of keeps you from thinking about yourself. When you think you have a self, just as if you think you have a soul, a sort of eternal, featureless little pearl in the middle of a big, ugly oyster, I don't think that's a valuable idea.
Now, this whole idea about the self, it seems to me, again, raises some fascinating speculative ideas that maybe come right out of science fiction. And I know Stanley Kubrick consulted you when he was making 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I guess I wonder if we think about that movie, doesn't Hal have a sense of self? Isn't that why Hal kills the astronauts, so that the computer can survive?
Well, there's an irony in that, because Stanley wouldn't tell me the plot of the movie. So he showed me the set for Hal, and it was made of very beautiful pieces of machinery. And he said, is that what it might look like? And I said, no, it'll probably be little black boxes, because it won't need all those labels. And Stanley scrapped the whole set and made the one you see in the movie. I had a couple of other criticisms. I designed the hands on the space pod, for example. But he wouldn't even discuss the artificial intelligence aspect. He did ask, is it possible that by 2001 it will be able to speak in a natural manner? And I said, I think that should happen, all right, but it won't know what it's saying.
So tell me, if you had the right technology within your grasp, how long do you think it would take before you could build a replica of a human being?
My optimistic view is that if the theories in the Emotion Machine book are right, I could make a big start toward that in about 5 years, maybe less. But probably we'd run into a dozen serious obstacles, and it wouldn't be anything like a human for another 20.
Do you think sometime in the future, when we have these super smart machines, computers that you're talking about, that they will make flesh and blood human beings obsolete?
I think that something very exciting like that will happen, but it'll go the other way. Namely, when we learn more about how our minds work and how our knowledge and thought processes are computed in the brain, then we'll be able to, I don't know whether it's called uploading or downloading, we'll be able to make a kind of computer and move all of the structure and processes and representations of knowledge that are in, say, your brain into this machine. And at first you could use that as a backup copy. If you get killed in a tsunami or earthquake or whatever, then we can take this computer and this backup copy and put it in a new body, maybe a clone. Or why not just stay in the computer?
Marvin Minsky is one of the world's leading experts in artificial intelligence. He teaches at MIT. The Emotion Machine is his latest book. Steve Paulson spoke with him.